Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ryan Seacrest here, so every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the old Licking County Jail in Newark, Ohio. The old Licking County Jail, built in 1889, resembles the Tower of London in its impressive castle-like architecture. With nearly 100 years as a jail and over 20 deaths within its walls, it's no surprise that legends of hauntings circulate around the old Licking County Jail. Disembodied voices have been reported regularly in the cell blocks, ranging from whispering into people's ears to loud, echoing bellows audible throughout the halls. Strange sounds, apparitions, and cold areas have been reported by visitors. They've also heard loud hammering and tapping noises. Some claim to have heard screams and cries for help. Today, we'll talk about the history and the hauntings of the old Licking County Jail with paranormal coordinator Darren Smith. Like, if you were to drive by this building, it does not look like a jail. I think you would drive by and think maybe a courthouse, maybe somebody's old mansion.
Or a lot of people think it's a castle and, you know, out of town.
Yeah, because it has the turrets. It has turrets on it.
Yeah, yeah. It's called a Romanesque style building. That's what it's supposed to replicate.
So it was built in 1889?
Yes.
And what was
it? Took about a year to build.
Which is surprising to me that it only took a year, because it looks like it would have taken a lot longer.
Yeah. And, you know, the way they worked back then, you know, they worked. And there wasn't a lot of work in the area in those days. So everybody was there working. But it took a year, and it was lauded for $69,000 and ended up going over budget to $120,000 was the total. The sheriff that had that built, he was kind of a fancy kind of guy, and the voters all voted it in. And of course, the sheriff actually lived in these jails. Most of Ohio jails, the sheriff lived in the building. So the front half of these buildings usually looked like a house. And then, of course, the separate building in the back was the jail. So he was a fancy kind of guy and had a lot of money and liked to spend money, especially when it wasn't his. And they ended up adding a fourth floor cell block to it at the end of the project. That's what made it go over budget. Plus, he had furniture handmade by dealers out of town, which was pretty upsetting to the voters because he didn't use local businesses. So that's a lot of why it went over budget.
So really, it kind of was like built for him. As far as he was concerned, this is his house. It's going to be decorated very fancy. And in the back, yes, just happens to be a jail.
Yeah. And there is several other jails in Ohio. There's actually one that we do a lot of work with that's in Paulding, Ohio. And she's had it actually restored back to original. And it's almost identical to ours, but smaller. Has the living quarters in the front. And then two floors of cell blocks in the back. But now, they have recently found some catacomb type basement hidden cells that were filled in, but it's basically, there's a lot of Ohio jails built like ours.
So we mentioned the turrets, but also I was reading that it has some interesting design features, like cat-like creatures sculpted into windowsills and an open mouth frog water spout.
Yes. Yeah. And that's like the popular point. Everybody likes to see that. And it, we actually got it working. It wasn't working for years, but it works now. And there's carvings almost on every window. Building sandstone, but it's got the limestone trim header pieces and sills. And I'm not positive what all the carvings stand for. The cat, the one that's out front on the bedroom windows, those are for protection. They're called a serpent cat. But just several hand-carved stone on the windows. And I really don't, we have a picture in the building with every one of them in it. And not everybody even can figure out what half of them are for.
So was that, you think, the architect's idea to do that? Or was that the jailer's idea? Like, I want a really fancy.
I'm sure it was the architect. J.W. Yost is the guy that built it. And he did several buildings here in town. He did the children's home. He did some. We have a famous college in Granville here in town that's called Denison University. And he's done a few halls there. And that was just his style. And I'm sure that was his idea.
And as far as cells, how many does it have and how many inmates would it house?
It's got four floors of cell blocks. First, second, third floor. There's eight cells in each one, and then there's eight on the fourth, obviously, too. And then it was built for two people per cell. So it was supposed to house 68 men or 68 people. The fourth floor was meant for women and children, what they say. Basically, it was a women's cell block. They say children, too, basically, because if the woman was arrested while she was had a kid, the child stayed in the jail with her. And this is all history stuff. So it's based, I'm telling you what it was built for and what it was built like.
Right.
That's not how it obviously ended up. When we closed in 1987, there was 6 to 8 men in every cell. So you can imagine a 6x8 cell with 6 to 8 men in it.
So how many men were they keeping in there at that time? Do you have
like
a total
number? Well, it's hard to say.
Number?
I mean, the sheriff that took over in 1980, Sheriff Billy, Gary Billy is his name. He's actually a board member of the jail still. He's the one that had the new jail built because of the overcrowding. And he said there was 6 to 8 men in every cell. And of course, the fourth floor was no longer housed women. We stopped housing women because it got too crowded and dangerous. So we shipped the women to another city here locally. And they turned the fourth floor cell block into D block. So there could have been 10 men in each cell up there, which would have been, you know, 80 people. In one floor.
That's
it was just pretty disgusting.
That's horrific conditions.
Yeah, and that's what got it closed. And I even remember as a kid, you know, I was 17 years old when that building closed. And none of us, nobody liked to go downtown back in those days because it was scary and dirty. And of course, now it's beautiful and all remodeled. But I remember going by there and going to the grocery store and seeing them hands hanging out the windows, yelling and screaming, people throwing cigarettes up to them. That was just an everyday occurrence. And now looking back at it, now that I know what it looks like inside, it's like, oh, I couldn't imagine how many people are, it'd just be nasty.
And it just amazes me that they were able to keep it in operation until 1987, that it wasn't shut down way before then.
Yeah, and that's there was a lot of problems with that. I mean, I remember the media and the town complaining about Sheriff Billy building a new jail, and they called it the Billy Hilton because it was this new elaborate jail with all the technology of the 80s, and it was updated. So the voters were really against it, but yet they didn't know what the inside of this actual jail looked like and how it was being housed. And the state was after their conditions. When people would go to court and be sent, the judge would send them to jail. He started refusing them. And so the judges started saying, you know, well, you don't take our prisoners. We're going to have you contempt of court. So there was several battles between the sheriff and the courts and the state. And he was running out of places to house these people in other jails, other prisons. So it took him 5 years to finally get the process started and get that new jail built.
And was it also kind of with the voters, did they have to vote on it to have permission to... Yeah, so they're like,
Yeah, they didn't want to spend the money, and they didn't care, you know, because really, you know, the way I see it, you know, I didn't pay any attention to that building. I just knew it was a jail. Unless you knew somebody in jail and were in there, you wouldn't know what it looked like. You didn't know the conditions. And, of course, the articles in the newspaper were talking about the poor conditions, and nobody cared. You know, because if you're in jail, you're in jail. Who cares how you live?
Which is sad, but that's true. A lot of people feel like that. You did something wrong. You're supposed to be punished. We don't provide you with comfy beds. It's a jail.
But yeah, and in my opinion, if we had jails like that now, maybe not so overcrowded. Okay, I don't want to go that far, but you know, no heat, no air conditioning, you know, no luxuries. And maybe the crime wouldn't be so bad. But, you know, I've been in the new jail. I've seen how it operates. It's ridiculous. They have a key to their own cell. They have heat, air conditioning year round. They get fed well. Even new prisoners have tablets where they can get on social media. They can do things like they're not. So, of course, they want to stay there. You know, and that's a lot of the problems with crime is they're not punished well enough. And I don't mean to be inhumane, but, you know, they get too many luxuries.
Well, they weren't treated well in that jail for a long time.
No, and he did the best he could. I mean, he's told stories about how he tried to keep them entertained because, you know, that many men sitting in jail in those tight quarters, it could get mentally disturbing. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of problems. So he had them painting. He had them working on things in the jail. He had them on crews outside. And he's like, I did everything in my power to keep these men sane from killing each other. And of course, a lot of the problems we had in that building were fighting and deaths and suicides. And that's just because the quarters were so tight and nasty. I mean, the place was dirty.
Well, it had to have been.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, with those conditions and that many people, it was never meant for that many people. So I would imagine the sewer system, all of the systems weren't equipped for that.
Yeah. And originally the jail was built, it's called an open air jail. So there was just the bars on the outside that you see now. Now there's plexiglass on the inside, which was still not plexiglass when the jail was open in the 80s. They put that in there just to, because they stored court records in the building. But originally, the jail was called an open-air jail. There was no heat on that side. There was no light, no toilets. Now there's toilets and sinks, and they had a boiler system installed in the 30s. But, you know, originally, there was nothing. You had a bucket in your cell, and someone went around and emptied buckets. They didn't bathe. I did read a story later that they were granted permission to start putting plumbing in, and one of the isolation cells on each floor turned into a shower unit. So, you know, originally it was just an open air jail with no light, no heat, no plumbing for the jail side, nothing.
And you think in the late 1800s, it was just a different time.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that, and there was a lot of people that didn't have running water or, you know, they didn't have the luxuries we have today. So that wouldn't have even been considered.
No. And the only reason we know any of this history is because we dig so many newspaper articles up, and the newspaper kept up with that building as far as, okay, this year the jail got condemned by the state. They need to fix this or they need to add this because of human rights. And, you know, they were not to be locked in their cells 24 hours anymore. They needed exercise. So it's hard to explain on voice or not seeing the inside of the building, but the cell blocks, each floor, the cells are actually down the center. The outside of that area is what they called the guard walk. So originally the guard would walk the outside of the cells and see in. So later when the state decided, you know, they needed exercise, each floor got to use that guard walk as their exercise. So that's when we start seeing their hands hanging out the windows and stuff like that, because that was their free time. And it's not very big quarters. I mean, I don't know the exact square footage of each floor, but it's just a hallway that goes on the outside edge of the cells where they can see in. And that was their free time.
Now, speaking of deaths, and there's been a lot of them in that prison, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, 22 confirmed.
And that's between prisoners and some of the staff.
Yes. We got a record of 3 sheriffs that passed away in the living quarter side of the jail. Of course, every sheriff we had in that building from the 1889 until 1970 actually lived in the building with their families or whatever.
Which was very common back in the day, you know, because you were basically going to be on call 24/7. Somebody had to be there with the prisoners. So that's your job. You're just on call all day, every day.
Yeah, and, our county didn't have a sheriff's department. We had a sheriff, and he had a couple officers. The jail was actually secured, and we had night guards. And most of the sheriffs would hire from other prisons that were prison guards that would work a second job, or they were just helpful hands that they considered guards. There was no sheriff team, you know, like a sheriff's department until 1980. When Sheriff Billy took over, he actually started a new Licking County Sheriff Department where he had on-road officers. He had people who worked night guards, people that staff, you know, your normal sheriff department. So, like I said, in 1970, Sheriff Marston was the first sheriff decided he wasn't going to live there. So he turned living quarters into like offices. The matron's floor, which is the third floor in the front, is like an apartment for the matron originally. So you had a matron that lived in the jail, and her job was to take care of feeding all the prisoners, taking care of the female prisoners. And some of the matrons on record were actually the sheriff's sister or a family member that took care of his family too. Just depends on who the sheriff was and who he hired. One of our tour guides and board members, Nelson Smith, actually his mother was hired in the mid 50s. To be the matron, and it was just her daughter, and Nelson, her boy, and she took the job, and they moved into the matrons, and he lived there through his teen life until he went to the Navy, and his mom stayed there 25 years and finally retired. Wow. But he's still now one of our tour guides and board members, and his stories are great. I mean, he was a teenager and he lived in a jail.
I know, that's crazy.
And he's just as ornery now as he was back then, but he's got some crazy stories. But like he said, you know, back in them days, the 50s and 60s, the crime wasn't near the crime it is now. The criminals weren't as bad at people. It was like your, you know, Mayberry. And he got to know several prisoners that were in there. He was interested in law school. So he met a guy that was in jail waiting trial for, I think it was manslaughter. He had actually had a DUI accident, and he was a lawyer. And Nelson actually sat at night and he taught him all kinds of law school stuff. And they helped him when he was real little. The prisoners even came down the basement and helped him build a soapbox derby car in the basement. I mean, you can't do that stuff nowadays with the prisoners because nobody's that nice.
But that's kind of cool, actually. Yeah. Your job there is paranormal coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a background in the paranormal? How were you able to, what even it's drew kind of you to the job?
It's a strange story. Back in 2013, I was actually just listening to the radio, and I was a painter, residential house painter. And I was at a lady's house painting, and we got talking about Halloween, and I make Halloween props. I have my own little business I do. And she's like, well, you'd probably be interested. I work for the old jail downtown, and we're starting a board and we want to start a haunted attraction. And she said, sounds like something you might be interested in volunteering for. So when they started to do it, I went ahead and went and applied to build the haunted attraction and help with it or whatever. Didn't know how far it would go. And the lady that they had in charge of it is now one of my best friends, Terry. He was in charge of doing this haunted house for this board and met me and said, well, what can you do? I said, well, I'm a builder. I can build. I can paint. I've been interested in haunted attractions my whole life. I'd love to be behind the scenes, whatever. So me and her took on the challenge of running Newark's first haunted attraction in an old jail. And we called it the Jail of Terror. So we went ahead and went with it. I built the haunt. We, not knowing how to run an attraction, and it blew up. I mean, it got so huge in 5 years that the board had to sell it because they're nonprofit and they were making too much money.
Oh, that's interesting.
And she was a ghost hunter when I met her, and she ran some of the paranormal in the jail, which I had no clue about. And of course, working at night after my normal job, I'd go in there and I'd build wall panels. I'd run electric and airlines and stuff for the props. And I started witnessing small little footsteps or door slamming or just thinking you're seeing something. And I just blew it off because it was a scary building. You know, it just like creeped me out. So one night I was there by myself. I had a little experience with something walked in front of a doorway in the basement, in a dungeon. And it didn't have a head or shoulders. It was just black and it blocked all the light in the door. And I kind of thought, well, maybe somebody came in. So I walked over to the door and it dissipated. It was gone. And as I walked away, I creeped out, ready to run out. it went back the other direction, but it was just a black square, like circle, and it was gone. And I'm like, okay, I'm done. So I left, snuck out of the building, ran home, called Terry, and she's like, oh, you witnessed a black mass, which is normal in that building. And I'm like, what is a black mass? You know, and then so over the years, I get, you know, more experiences with the paranormal in that building, Terry teaching me what it is. And I slowly started ghost hunting with her and getting into the ghost hunts. And then she had me doing tours and I got interested in that. And then she started running ghost hunts, private ghost hunts where you host. And I got to meet the paranormal people in the community. And for 8 years, we did this. And then she decided she was done with the jail after COVID. She wanted to start a new life because she had some health issues and stuff. And the board said, well, we're going to get rid of the paranormal too. We can't run that anymore either. So the guy that actually bought the Jail of Terror as a business hired me to run the Jail of Terror by myself, manage it, hire the kids, train the kids, my own staff, whatever. He's like, would you want me to take over the paranormal and I'll just hire you to run it too? I said, yeah, you have to, because you know, 8 years of a paranormal community is what's running this jail. It's what keeps it going. And I've met thousands of people and I've millions of friends in the business. And I'm like, I can't just let it go. So he's like, well, how about I just make a contract with the jail that I will do the ghost hunts and I just, you run it. And he goes, I don't know much about it, but tell me how you ran it, how you, you know, booked the dates, how you invoiced. And then I hired a couple hosts that I know in the paranormal business. And it's been about since February, since I took it over, and it's just as busy as it always has been, obviously.
And you still do the haunted attraction every year?
Yeah, we do several.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, we do. Of course, Halloween's the long one. It's September and October. And then we do like a Krampus Christmas show, which is like a two-night event. And then we do a Valentine's Day two-night event. Easter's a one-night event. And then last weekend we had the summer slaughter, they call it. It's like a goofy Halloween bloodied up characters having a luau type thing. And it's a lot of fun.
I mean, love that you do those things year round.
Yeah. And we never did that before. When me and Terry did the Jail of Terror, we took all of September and October to build it, to hire, to train. By the end of October, we were done.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to go home. But the way they run it now, it keeps your actors interested, keeps them around, and you get better actors that way, get better kids to work with, because it gives them something to look forward to. Oh, we got another haunt here in a month, you know, and they come back. And the business is good. I mean, it's packed house every time.
Now, does the board understand that the paranormal is also part of the building? Or do you feel like some of them are like, yeah, paranormal, but I'm really a skeptic. They say there's activity.
A couple of them. And, you know, I know all the board members personally and have worked with them for 8 years. And some of them are interested in it. None of them want to be a part of it. They love it because it is good fundraising for the jail. And they allow it. They've been allowing it for all these years. Basically, we just give them an option. Here's how we want to do it. Here's how much we should charge. Go for it. And they loved it because it was making money. They don't have to be there. They don't do anything there anyway. But
let's go way back and talk about some of this dark history of the jail, because there's some dark stuff that happened there. And I was reading about in 1910, there was a man named Carl Etherington? Etherington?
Etherington.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm going to let you tell the story because it's pretty brutal.
Carl was a 17-year-old kid. He had already been in the military. He had lied about his age and was in the military. The only thing we don't know is how long he was in the military before all this happened, but I'm sure it wasn't very long, within a year. He had gotten a stomach ailment while he was overseas, and they shipped him out. Now, he was from Kentucky, so he ended up on a train system when he got out of the military and ended up in Cleveland, Ohio, in a train station switching trains. And at that time, Newark, Ohio was very, very mob ran. It was very dirty. They called it the Black Eye of Ohio. And of course, it was during Prohibition, and Newark had voted dry. basically because there was 68 bars or brothels around that courthouse square running illegally. And they were all ran by the bigwigs of the city, you know, your sheriffs, your commissioners, you know, mayors.
Oh, yeah. They're Everybody making money.
Them. Oh, yeah. And of course, they voted dry. And of course, Granville is a little city right outside of Newark here. That mayor at the time had enough of Newark and the problems. So he decided to put on hiring spree of hiring what they called marshals, groups of men that would come in and shut these illegal bars and brothels and places down. So he made a plan, you know, I'm going to hire X amount of people. I want 6-8 teams to come to this town on a certain date, and we're just going to raid the whole town. So when Carl Etherington ended up in train station in Cleveland, he was offered that job. Somebody was up there hiring and hired him and said, you know, you want to be a marshal, you're going to be deputized by a mayor of Granville, Ohio. They're going to send you to shut these illegal bars down with a team of 5 people. Of course, he took the job, still 17 years old. So they shipped him to Newark and he was deputized. I think there was 9 teams of marshals with 5 or 6 men on each team sent to Newark that day. It was July 8th, 1910. Carl's team was late to come into town. Of course, this started at 8 o'clock in the morning and they had the whole town is now enraged. They're arresting people. And of course, the sheriff's letting them right back out the door. There's fires going on. There's fights. You know, it's just total mayhem. Carl's team came into the first bar they came to was called the Last Chance Saloon on Union Street. And they busted in the bar. And of course, the bar owners was a ex-Newark police chief at the time. William Howard was his name. They put up a fight and fought all the men until 4 of the guys on Carl's team had escaped the bar. Carl got trapped behind, fighting with William Howard in the back of the bar. And Carl pulled his service revolver and shot William Howard in the stomach, just basically out of self-defense. And, of course, didn't kill him right away. The other men in the bar, of course, had him aided, taken away. And, of course, Carl Etherington, the sheriff, sent his guys down, picked him up, said, no, we'll take you to the jail for safekeeping because if we let you out in public, they're going to kill you. Of course, that was a lie. They put him in the jail, and the mob of 3,000 to 5,000 people stormed in the jail. And of course,
wait, let me interrupt there. Did you said 3,000 to 5,000 people?
Yeah.
Even if somebody wanted to stop that, you can't stop that many people. And it, how would you defend it?
Yeah, you couldn't. And and we base all this history off a lot of this is just articles and some history that we've heard from people. The story is supposed to be told that the sheriff tried to fight off the crowd, but they broke in the north door, which the north door is the public entrance to the jail side. And it's still the original bar doors. They open out. They don't open in, and there's no way for them to open in because they're solid steel bars. So the story is that this mob of 3,000 to 5,000 people, I'm talking women, children, there's pictures of the crowd. It was everybody. It was just the whole town was angry and was going to go find this guy. So the sheriff's story is he tried to hold them off. They broke the door down and went into jail and went to Carl's cell. Nobody knows how many men went into that cell block. We do know there was 7 arrested at the end of all this, but they beat him, stabbed him. You know, there was stories of hammers being swung and hitting him. I personally think he probably died in the jail, but they basically drug him out of the jail across the canal to the courthouse square and they lynched him. In my opinion, he was probably already dead by then because the picture of him in the morgue, he was demolished. Wow. I mean, he was completely beat, stabbed. You know, and he was swelled all up, and he was just a little 17-year-old kid.
Oh.
So.
Oh. But that's horrific.
There's also articles that say Carl was pleading for his life before they broke in, and he was trying to commit suicide. And a lot of our information we get from psychics and mediums that do the ghost hunting. So you take all the claims you hear at all these ghost hunts, which are what, 2 every week or 3 to 4 every week, and you just kind of compare notes over a year or 2. And all of them are saying that they can feel stomach pain when they're in that cell, or they're overwhelming fear. And it's probably from him. His energy's left in that building, obviously. But he did have a stomach ailment. He had drank some kind of, I can't remember what they call that, where you drink bad water.
Oh.
And you get a stomach disease in the stomach. So I'm sure he was not feeling good. He's probably fearing for his life, because I'm sure he could hear the crowd outside yelling his name, chanting and stuff. But
and at his age, at 17 years old, number one, you would never now put somebody in charge of a situation like that at 17 with no training, because he was never set up to succeed, you know, especially putting him into that situation with prohibition. You know, those people were brutal. They were making a lot of money. And you're messing with their money.
Yeah, especially, you know, the mayor and the bigwigs. And the sheriff was supposedly not, his name was Sheriff Linky. He was supposedly not involved in the illegal activities. Nobody will ever know now. But he was letting the people back out the door as they were arresting. So,
because it also makes me think that even if he wasn't getting a kickback or something, his own life would have been in danger. So he... You know, if he didn't let them in, they would have gone after him as well. They would have just killed him first on their way to him.
Yeah, and that's the story. That story's, and basically, we were, like I said, most of our history of that kind of time is mostly from history of newspaper articles, because it made national news. We did have a local police officer in 2017 dig a lot of history of his family, and there was a sister left that could tell some stories of Carl Etherington's, which recently passed away. But we found his headstone down in Kentucky, Lewisburg, Kentucky is where he's from. We learned a lot about his parents having to be, you know, shipped up here to identify the body and stuff like that. He was never recognized as a fallen officer until 2017. This Newark police officer actually dug into the history, found in Granville's records of him being deputized in 1910 and what time and date it was. So he took that to Washington, D.C. And now I guess there is a plaque for fallen officers with Carl Etherington's name in Washington, D.C.
You know, maybe everything he went through, at least now he's being honored for that.
Yeah, because after that all went down, of course, the governor of Ohio was instantly in Newark the next day and fired everybody, you know, got rid of the commissioners, all the bigwigs, and Newark was shut down and it stopped. So prohibition, they voted dry. They followed through with the rules. Everything started cleaning up. Of course, it wasn't still the perfect town, but.
But it took something that brutal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel like Carl is still, you know, I know psychics can pick up on that, but do you feel like he's still there in some way?
All the time, you know, and I ghost hunt too nowadays and have been for years, but I've never witnessed a team in all the years I've been doing this get anything from him other than, you know, your real psychics will pick up on certain things, but his presence being there or his energy, I don't think so.
Oh, because I mean, like the last place that poor guy would want to haunt would be that jail.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people say. Well, would you want to come back here? Or maybe he's stuck here. Well, you know, maybe he crossed. You know, I don't know how that all works, but none of us do. But there is other things that come out in that jail of other deaths that have been in that jail that we know they're still there. The big one is Mae Varner.
And which is also a tragic story.
Mae was kind of a troubled lady here in town. She was, I don't want to call her a town drunk because I've said that before and people get offended, but she just wasn't right. And she was like to overdose on sleeping pills a lot. She was always in trouble for domestic violence. Her husband actually had a restraining order on her when she died because he was trying to file for divorce and she was constantly brutally beaten on him or being arrested for something to do with him. And so the sheriff and everybody at that time knew who she was and familiar with her situation. And they got a call that she was taken by ambulance to the hospital again for ODing on sleeping pills. So the sheriff sent his guys down to pick her up, and they went in her room to arrest her. And she said, if you take me back to that jail, I'll kill myself. And, you know, she said this all the time. And so they arrested her and took her to jail. And of course, handed her off to the matron. The matron got her in her garb, took her upstairs. She was the only prisoner on the women's floor that night. There was nobody else up there. So the matron took her in her cell, locked her in her cell, and went back to her apartment, shut all the doors. And nobody really knows how the matron found out she was burning. But I think the story is she smelled smoke. No men were allowed on that floor, so she had to take care of any problems that were up there. And she ran in there, and May was standing in the middle of her cell, completely engulfed in flames.
Oh, my God. How horrific.
No, I get a lot of ghost hunters are like, are you sure that's what happened? Well, that's what was reported, and there's nobody else up here. I don't think somebody actually went up here and set her on fire. I mean, matron at the time wouldn't have done that. So they were allowed to smoke in the jail at certain times of the day in those years, but they weren't allowed to have matches or lighters. So they think that she had snuck a match into the jail cell with her, and she just set her garb on fire. You know, the matron explained that she was standing there. She wasn't screaming. She wasn't running around. She was just standing there, burning. I think she did it. She wanted to die. She was done.
And it sounds like she had addiction and probably, I'm going to guess, mental health issues.
Yeah.
That at the time, we didn't think of addiction and mental health the way we think of now.
Yeah, and this was in the 50s, so you know.
So there wasn't a lot of help, and there still isn't a lot of help for people who need it.
No, there's not. And that's 90% of the cases in any of these jails that have death stories or suicides, because most of the deaths in the jail are suicides. You know, their life is crap. They're in jail. They're getting ready to face court time, or they're getting ready to face prison, whatever. This was going to be a big one for her, because it was, I don't remember how many times she had been arrested, but the sheriff was really going to nail her, I'm sure, on this one. And she knew it. And she was being left by her husband. It was actually his birthday, the day she died. So, yeah, it's bad. But she definitely haunts that jail.
What do you pick up on from her?
She moans, literally moans. I mean, just out loud. And this isn't like TV where, you know, demons and ghosts, it's nothing like TV, but you'll hear a faint woman talking, especially when you're a tour guide and you have a group of people in the cell block and you're telling May's story. You'll always hear a woman's voice over mine or whoever the guide is. It's like we're telling a date wrong, or we're telling something wrong, or she's wanting to explain herself. That's a constant. I mean, it can happen. If me and you were there now and I was telling her story, I guarantee you'll hear a mumbling or some kind of a female voice in that cell block. If you're into ghost hunting and you know the lingos and everything, it's definitely an attraction. Everybody that goes there says there's a woman up there moaning, or she'll react when you talk to her in her cell. Terry had made a music box and dedicated it to her that people will open and play and do EVPs and recordings, and she'll react. We've had chairs moving up there. Someone walks up and down the hallway cell block, which may not be her, but 90% of what goes on in that floor is her.
And it makes sense that she would be there.
Yeah.
You know, because her life was very tragic. And, you know, who knows what happens when we die. But in her head, she might not think she deserves anything better. And that's where she needs to be. And she can't leave. Maybe she feels safe there. You know, it's like an outside world. She couldn't seem to make it work either.
Yeah. And that you know, that's the way I've learned over the years. I work with a team called Interface Death Paranormal from Southern Ohio. And he's more of a researcher. He's a ghost hunter / photographer, but his interests are more like what causes the paranormal, what's energy doing, you know, all the big scientific stuff. And he can explain the jail by saying, you know, the jail is one of those locations that basically works off of what's called PK, which is psychokinetic energy. It's the energy of a tragic incident or stained inside that building, and it works off of your energy. So if you're real enthusiastic and you're there to see May, it's going to come back out somehow. Almost every team that comes there has the same experiences with paranormal that we claim to see and hear all the time. So it, something's got to be real. That's what caught my interest in the first place with paranormal is like, everybody's saying the same thing and they've never been here before. So something's definitely going on here with this person or that person or this ghost or that ghost. So that's what caught my interest. But working with Justin Brown, and he's been there, oh God, I bet you 8 times he's investigated there. And I've sat in on his investigations, and he tries everything in, under the sun to make this stuff happen. And the things that do happen when he's around is amazing. I mean, there is something there. That's all I can say. I don't know what it is.
When you have different groups of people going in, and they all have a lot of the investigations, they're similar yet different. Everybody kind of has their own approach and the equipment they get the most response from. But when you see people coming in there and talk to people coming in there and they're getting similar data from and experiences, it really says a lot.
Yeah. And what makes it even more interesting is the experienced ghost teams, which I'm part of a ghost team. I mean, just friends of mine that are in the ghost world or the paranormal, and we'll call each other. We'll meet at, like, we just did Mansfield Prison, or we did the Hinsdale House, just friends. But like you said, they all have their own approach. But what a lot of teams will come there, the first thing you ask them is, do you want a tour? Do you want paranormal claims? Do you want just history? Do you want names of deaths? Most of them will say no. They don't want to know anything. They want to go in blind, do a little bit of research, do some ghost hunting for a couple hours, and then come to your office where you're hosting and say, okay, on the third floor, we had this happen. Is that normal? And you say, well, yeah, we think that's George Hackett, or we think it's May Varner. And then they'll go and they'll really aim on that spot. And then they'll come report to you and say, well, this happened. And it's 90% of the time is every team's the same.
Wow.
And there is off nights. There's nights that some stuff that comes through and happens in that building, I can't explain. Never heard of it, never seen it. And that's just the paranormal. That's how it works.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the old Licking County Jail in Newark, Ohio. We'll continue our conversation about the hauntings in part two, so make sure you listen. For more information on paranormal investigations, email jotparanormal@gmail.com. For more information on the haunted attraction, Jail of Terror, visit newarkjail.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it there for 3 days free, or you can go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, also all ad free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
What's up, Boos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.